Hello, I'm Christopher Thomas. Welcome to the phone-in on Radio Noon. If you've ever looked up into the night sky and wondered if anyone out there is looking back, then we want to talk with you. Every few months we hear or read about someone somewhere who reports seeing an unidentified flying object. A lot of people go even further. They claim they were kidnapped by alien visitors. They're always returned, unharmed, and generally they can't remember much about the encounter. The sightings are reported, filed, and for the most part forgotten, very seldom explained. My guest today doesn't forget about these visits. He studies them. Stanton Friedman has spent years investigating UFOs. He's convinced that the Earth has, in fact, been visited by aliens. And what's more, he says governments around the world are aware of these visits, and they've been trying to cover them up. He calls it a cosmic Watergate. Mr. Friedman even has some ideas about where these visitors may be coming from. I'll talk with Stanton Friedman in just a moment, but we want to hear from you. Have you ever seen an unidentified flying object? If you're calling from the Metro Toronto area, please dial 975-5800. That's in Metro Toronto, 975-5800. If you're calling from out of town, dial 0, area code 416-975-5860. We will pay for the extra long-distance charges. Dial 0, area code 416-975-5860. If you have a cellular phone anywhere in the province, you can reach us by dialing number sign 740. Because it is a cellular call, we can't pay for it. You can reach us, though, at number sign 740. And if you're calling really, really long distance, like outer space long distance, we cannot pay for that call, but we sure do want to hear from you. Stanton Friedman, welcome to the phone-in.
Delighted to be on.
Stanton, you're down in New Brunswick.
Yes.
Tell me, are there areas of Canada where these sightings take place more than others?
I wouldn't say so. Let me correct something you said earlier, though. You say sightings occur every few months. As a matter of fact, sightings are going on far more commonly than that. I get a clipping service, and I get 20 pages, and it's selected because they have far more material than they can use, of clippings every month of UFO sightings. All the audiences I've spoken to, something over 600 colleges in 8 provinces and 50 states, typically I find 10% of the people believe they've seen one. The same goes for Gallup polls. So the problem isn't that people don't see them. It's the other end of your statement, that is that get reported. Only 1 in 20 of the people who claim to have seen one at my lectures reported what they saw.
Is that because of fear of ridicule?
Fear of ridicule. The laughter curtain is certainly the major reason, although for some people it's government security. In front of 1,300 people, I asked anybody who had reported, if he wanted to tell us about it. He said, I can't. They told me not to say anything. He was in the service at the time. And I've talked to loads of such people. The cosmic Watergate is real. It's not a construct, a clever notion from Stan Friedman, and at my lectures I prove it very quickly, showing certain documents all blacked out. What a lot of people don't realize in North America, and our quite free society, is how much information is still kept under wraps. For example, the National Security Agency is directly involved in collecting UFO information. They're the largest of the U.S. intelligence agencies. Fewer than half the people in my audiences in the States have ever heard of them, and yet their annual budget, according to the Washington Post, is between $10 and $15 billion a year, and they employ 160,000 people. And there's an agency whose budget is black, that is not under the control of Congress. You can hide an awful lot of secrets for between $10 and $15 billion a year. And I've spent time in a lot of archives, and it's amazing how much material from the late 40s, early 50s, 60s, is never even been gone through, so you have no access to it at all, and how much of what has been gone through is still kept classified all these years later, 40 years later.
And yet I remember back some of the very, in fact it relates to, I mentioned you have an idea as to where these people
yeah.
might be coming from, and that came out of the famous, is it Barney and Betty Hill in Vermont, or New Hampshire?
New Hampshire.
Back
good.
In the 60s or 61,
yes.
1961. There was a lot of coverage of that, a lot of people delved into it. I know.
Oh, sure. The cover-up isn't of what the public says to the public. The cover-up is what the government agencies, who after all are in the best position to get the best data, the good radar, for example, the aircraft spotting UFOs, what happens at military bases with captured wreckage, all the rest of that. That's the information that's been covered up.
Captured wreckage of UFOs?
Yeah. what some people recognize, at least, and which something I've been heavily involved in since the late 70s, is the recovery of the wreckage of one, quite conceivably two, flying saucers in New Mexico in 1947, the so-called Roswell incident. My colleagues and I have been at this for over a decade. We've now talked to more than 150 people involved with this event, including half a dozen people who handled the wreckage, who described the strange symbols, people involved directly in the cover-up, such as retired generals, including counterintelligence corps agents, including...
To what end?
What do you mean? Why did they cover it up?
Yeah.
Well, presumably they were ordered to do so. When you stop to think about it, you can think of a whole host of darn good reasons for covering it up. The first and most important, I suppose, is trying to figure out how the darn things work. I mean, that's where the action is. I spent 14 years in industry working on classified, government-sponsored, advanced research and development programs, spending, in some cases, $100 million a year. We want to figure out how the darn things work. They make wonderful weapons delivery and defense systems, as if we needed any more, but anyway, they do. And so the first three good reasons for all governments, not just the U.S. and Canadian governments, and there is a cover-up in Canada, too, and that's fairly easy to establish as well. Three good reasons. You want to figure out how they work. You set up your secret program. You've got wreckage, after all. Rule number one of security is you can't tell your friends without telling your enemies. They listen to the radio and watch television and so forth. The second problem is the other side of the exactly the same coin. What if the other guy figures out how they work before you do? There are loads of sightings in the Soviet Union and apparently crashes as well. You don't want them to know, you know, they know kind of thing. And the third problem is the really big one. There are a few smaller ones. That is, if there were to be an announcement that indeed some flying saucers are alien spacecraft, there'd be an immediate push on the part of the younger generation anyway for a whole new view of ourselves instead of as Canadians, Americans, Russians, Chinese, as Earthlings.
Let's take what you say at face value. If these aliens are in fact trying to make contact, why
don't
they?
Wait,
I used the wrong word there, didn't I?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, let's say they have come. Why haven't they gone over and above the National Security Agency and the forces and made contact?
Well, you have to turn it the other way around. Two ways, actually. One is you don't know that they haven't. And secondly, why should they? They know we know they're here after you've been tracked on radar. I mean, our ego says, gee, if they're coming here, my college classmate Carl Sagan seems to take this approach. If aliens were visiting Earth, they would certainly want to talk to him, and they haven't asked for an appointment. They must not be coming here. We can conceive of a whole host of reasons for coming to this planet that certainly don't involve talking to us any more than I talk to the squirrels in the forest. I mean, maybe some of your listeners do, but I don't. So why should they? They have their purposes.
Do your scientific colleagues, though, think that, in fact, is what you're all about, talking to squirrels in the forest?
There are undoubtedly a small percentage, just as 5% of the people in the United States don't believe we've been to the moon. I'm sure that 5% of the scientists around believe that I'm talking to the squirrels in the forest. But if you look at the opinion polls, and one of the many myths about flying saucers, very prevalent but still mythical, is the notion that most people in general don't believe in flying saucers, and most scientists in particular don't believe in flying saucers. We've had polls for well over 20 years, opinion polls, that clearly establish that most people do believe in UFOs, that the greater the education, the more likely to believe in UFOs, and that polls of engineers and scientists involved in research and development activities, two-thirds of them do believe in flying saucers. So the notion that it's kooks and quacks and little old ladies in tennis shoes is absolute nonsense. No. Never supported by any opinion poll except the frantic comments of the noisy negativists, as I put them.
My guest is Stanton Friedman. He is a physicist. He is also a UFO researcher. He's in our studios in New Brunswick. I want to find out a little later on where Stanton thinks these aliens may be coming from, but we'll go to the phones first to somebody driving their car in Willowdale. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon.
Hi, good afternoon. Now, I don't know. Can you hear me, by the way?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know what I saw, but I was driving to Ottawa very early one morning, and I was going around about Oshawa, in that area, and there was a car in front of me and a car behind me. It was a very clear night, or a very clear morning, and I noticed up in the sky a light, and this light was stationary, and you know, as you're going around corners, it didn't seem to deviate, it didn't seem to move any, apart from the fact it seemed to be coming lower. Now, when it got, I don't know how high it was off the ground, a few thousand feet, I suppose, there were three lights, in fact, that I was looking at, and I was going on and going on, and this damn thing wouldn't move. It wouldn't go out of the way. So it wasn't a plane, and it wasn't a balloon, because it kept very stationary. A little bit further on, before we got to one of the service stations, the light seemed to go up very quickly, very high, and then come down again, lower, and then just went straight up in the air and disappeared. Well, I got out of my car, and the guy behind me in his car got out, and we both said to each other, "Did you see that?" and we don't know what the hell it was. Now, I can't say it was a UFO, but it was bloody eerie.
Well, I think you can say it was a UFO, that is an unidentified flying object. What you can't say is that it was necessarily a flying saucer.
No.
And I can't say what it is either. It takes a lot of investigation to pin down a sighting. Most UFOs do turn out to be IFOs, identifiable flying objects. It's the ones that don't, and five large-scale scientific studies provide us with thousands of reports that don't get identified. They're the ones we're interested in. Lights in the sky, it's hard to do much with. But when they come close, when it's a combination of things, really, that excites us. One is the appearance of the unknowns. The other is the behavior of those unknowns. In other words, when you have a round metallic disc-shaped object, definite size, shape, surface texture, seen in front of a mountain so you know it's closer than the mountain.
Right.
That
well, and what surprised me was the rate of ascent, though, into the sky. It just seemed to whistle up into the sky and disappear.
Well, certainly it sounds like something we don't have available to us. I mean, why buy F-18s if you've got something that can behave the way that thing
I went a stage further. I checked to see if there were any weather balloons that had been sent up. There was nothing out there, and there were no commercial airlines flying. There were no military aircraft flying. So I don't know what it was, but I'll tell you something. It was a very strange experience. It made you feel a little bit sort of your hair rise at the back of your neck.
And
because, you know, it's very strange.
And did you report it?
No, I didn't report it. I thought people might think I was crackers or something. But you know, the more I think about it and the more I've read in the newspapers and on reports about unidentified flying objects, the more perhaps I think that maybe that's what I saw.
Thanks for calling in, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. To Collingwood. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon.
Hi, just turn off the radio.
Okay, be quick. My guest is Stanton Friedman. He's down in Fredericton, New Brunswick. He's a physicist and a UFO researcher. Hi, Collingwood.
Hi, well, I did see a UFO back in, strange enough, November of 1965, when I've since read there was quite a bit of activity, which may have been related to the blackout. It was right over Toronto, looked like a full moon, and when it dropped down, I could see the classic saucer shape, and it appeared to be cruising above Yonge Street. But the strange thing was, at that time, I didn't know what a UFO was. Flying saucers were something in a movie. A UFO was a term I'd never heard before. Until a year later, when they were talking about marsh gas, that well-covered incident.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, in Michigan, yes.
Yeah, and my father, I said to my father, I saw one of those things last year, and he said to me, I bet you did. You know, I thought he was going to tell me not to be foolish, but he was in the Air Force. He knew all about Foo Fighters. He had been in the room in Washington, which had the Blue Book records. And that was the first time I heard the expression UFO. Now, when I saw it, I thought it was something being developed up at Avro, that Avro hover car. I was actually looking for markings on it. Had no idea that it could be anything else. The strange thing was that, you know, I wasn't fascinated with UFOs. I read one book by Hynek after that.
Yes.
The penny dropped just a couple of years ago. I just heard a story in the radio in 72 that President Eisenhower had met with aliens at an Air Force base in New Mexico. Have you heard that?
Well, actually, the story goes that he met them at Edwards Air Force Base in California, and that the crash had occurred in New Mexico, and the bodies were picked up there and taken to Edwards.
A friend of mine flew with a man who was at that Air Force Base. In 1978, a very good family friend told me this was flying for an air cargo company, now defunct, Rhodes International, out of Columbus, Indiana. And he had a flight engineer with him. They saw something they thought was a UFO coming back into Bacalar Field, their home air base. And it got them talking. And when they got back for a coffee, he told them this story, that he had been with the U.S. Air Force as an officer in 1947, that they had got this wreckage back in and remains. And one night, shortly after this material was recovered from Roswell, a craft came down and visited. The next morning, Truman came in on a U.S. transport, and he was there the whole day. That night, four craft came down to the air base. The whole air base, of course, had been put on full alert. And they were pledged, everybody was pledged not to say anything. It was full national security.
Can I stop you there? Because he obviously did talk. Why didn't what he had to say get reported further, or what happened to him?
I tried to call the Toronto Sun. I don't know what I never met the man. This is secondhand. But I tried to call the Toronto Sun with this information when they had a few articles. And, you know, they said, well, this is all very interesting. And then I never heard another thing. It's hard to get through to the media.
I'll give an example of that a little bit later about an incredible case in the Soviet Union this year involving the head of the Soviet Air Defense Command and his written statements that has been sent to over 100 media people, none of whom picked up on it.
Now, Stanton, you said you knew about this California Eisenhower story. What was the
revolution? Yeah, now, this is another version on that story, and I would very much like to get this gentleman's number off the air because you see, 47, Truman was indeed president. The story goes that when Ike was in Southern California in Palm Springs, as a matter of fact, he disappeared for several hours, and the press was making a hue and cry, and the cover story was put out that he was being taken care of by a dentist. And a colleague of mine has checked into that quite thoroughly, and we don't know that he was necessarily over at Edwards Air Force Base, but the dentist story falls through. There are all kinds of medical records on Ike, you know, every time he had a hangnail removed, and yet there isn't any mention of the dental records. The dentist's wife, when contacted, couldn't remember what her husband did for the president. There is no thank you note, although they sent thank you notes to everybody and his brother, you know, when the president comes back, thanks for your help and all that, none to the dentist. Now, that doesn't prove that he was at Edwards Air Force Base looking, talking to aliens or whatever, seeing bodies. But it certainly says that their explanation for where he had been didn't hold up. The question, of course, there are other people who claim that he was taken there, did see bodies, and it was an incredible event. But the business of Truman flying in, now that's a new wrinkle. I mean, Truman certainly knew what was going on. I've just finished
in 47.
Yes.
Okay, well, a whole different, was the beginning of the whole flap.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to break in here. It looks like you have made the breakthrough you wanted, so if you can hang on the line, we'll get your name and phone number and pass it on to Stanton later, okay?
Please.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. We go to Toronto. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Net.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Have you seen a UFO?
No. I've seen identifiable flying objects. Mm-hmm. I was in the Canadian Air Force, and I spent three furloughs on the American United States Air Force stations.
And what's your reaction to Stanton's allegation that the forces, the government, are covering these things up?
Well, I don't have any comment on that, but the military of the free world have been experimenting with different airborne craft.
Oh, sure.
And I think it takes a great deal of imagination to think that they're flying unidentified flying objects from outer space.
I don't think it takes any imagination at all. When you get enough eyewitness testimony and you get enough physical trace cases and enough combined radar and visual sightings, you're sort of stuck with that explanation, like it or not. Remember now that there are stars out there that are a billion years older than the sun. We in the last 50 years have made incredible progress in terms of being earthbound to being able to go to the stars within yours and my lifetime if we choose to spend the money. So if somebody else got started, you know, even only a bare minimum of a million years before we did, he's sure going to know a lot we don't know. Travel to the stars, contrary to what the noisy negativist would tell you, is not really the big deal people want to make of it. You know, it's sort of like the difference between Lindbergh crossing the ocean 63 years ago in, 33 hours or something. This year, 10 million people will cross the Atlantic Ocean, most of them not very good flyers, obviously. Not brave, not special, not anything. And it'll only take 5 or 6 hours. So that interstellar travel, I've worked on fission rockets, fusion nuclear rockets. It's not really the big deal. Right now, it's as close to us as going to the moon was 50 years ago. We know how to do it. Took one heck of a commitment to get the job done, obviously, of people, money, engineering, effort, and so forth. So
I spent a week in Nellis Air Force Base in outside of Las Vegas.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm familiar with the place.
I spent 4 days at Kirtland Air Force Base.
Another good place, yes, I've been there.
And Homestead Air Force Base in Florida.
In Florida, right.
I have seen air bases in the United States where cameras are out of bounds.
Oh, yeah. And
outlawed. Now, of course they're experimenting. They have to for the national defense.
Certainly, and you have things like Aurora or whatever the latest name is. This is supposedly the new reconnaissance plane, a stealth reconnaissance plane that'll take the place of the SR-71 that supposedly can go to 250,000 feet and supposedly can go Mach 7. I worked on classified programs. I am fully convinced that we are indeed working on the next generation and maybe the one after that.
But are you arguing, caller, that this is what people are seeing, these experiments, rather than something from outer space?
I feel that all the identifiable flying objects that have been sighted over the last 40, 50 years by reliable sources and unreliable sources, it can be pinpointed to military and civilian experimental aircraft.
None of the large-scale scientific...
and not somebody from outer space, another world, another people in a planet distance from Earth, perhaps millions of light years
away. Oh, wait.
I don't feel that that is where, that's the source. It is, that's imagination.
Okay, sir, before Stanton comes in, I'm going to thank you for calling, and then I'll let Stanton respond. Thanks a lot for calling in, sir.
Let's forget this nonsense about millions of light years away. Our own galaxy is only 80,000 light years across, but within 54 light years of here, there are 1,000 stars, of which 46 are very similar to the sun. We need not concern ourselves with hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands or millions or billions of light years. Just down the street, around the corner, the next block over. Of course I'm not talking about going to other galaxies or going millions of light years away. Now, the notion that all sightings can be explained is nonsense in view of every large-scale scientific study, including those done for the military and done way back in the 50s. The question isn't, are most sightings explainable as conventional something or others? The question is, are any sightings extraterrestrial spacecraft? And the answer is yes. And, of course, we have to factor in the abduction cases, the physical trace cases. There's a man in Missouri, he's literally from Missouri, who has collected more than 4,200 physical trace cases from 66 countries. These are cases where the saucer is seen on or near the ground, and after it leaves, one finds physical changes in the environment, peculiar changes, the equivalent of burn circles, burn rings, landing gear marks, soil changed in appearance and texture and composition down 14 inches in the soil. That's what's going on. I find that less acceptable than the experiences that are related over and over again with great anguish.
We go back to the phones. I'm not making this up. To Moonstone near Barrie, Ontario. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon.
Thank you very much.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi. I like it up here in Moonstone.
Great.
Yeah, I changed that to Moon Rock because you can sway as you walk.
Have you ever?
You know, you can get rhythm out of it.
Alien poetry, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was a fella that had a small farm down in Stroud there. He had a small chicken farm, you know.
Yeah.
I found the chickens are a good musical instrument, too. Because when you go in the barn, the old rooster will get after you. Thinks you're going to steal her chickens. But anyway, like roofs sometimes go astray and they start leaking or something, or I want to prevent that from leaking in the house, so I went and bought a large 5-gallon can of tar, and I thought, gee, I can't cut that up on the ladder, so I went and got a small pail and filled a small pail and started brushing it on the roof. Then I come down off the roof, and I went up several times filling the little can when I got down. One time when I got down, all of a sudden there was a sound, and there was rushing wind all around me, and I got really scared. I wonder what in the world is going on here, you know. It sounded a rushing wind all over around me. And then I felt like I was compelled to look up. And when I looked up in the sky, there was this silver ship in the sky. No sound of motor, just the sound of rushing of wind. And after that happened, after looking up and seeing that, I got scared. I couldn't work the rest of the day. So I went into the house and sat down in a chair for a minute. I said to myself, I know what I'll do. I'll phone the police. So I got on the phone and phoned the police, and I asked them if we were being invaded from outer space. And anyway, the next day it got in the paper, the newspaper, about this flying object that I had seen. And my goodness, that caused me a lot of excitement. And I couldn't rest at night. I had to keep hunting, what's the answer to these flying saucers? And I've got the answer now, I know. And there was a phone call a couple of days later, and there was a woman on the phone. She wanted me to go to a UFO meeting. I thought, I never heard of such a thing, UFO meeting. She said, yeah. So I said, okay, I'll go to it. And anyway, I went to it. All kinds of people in there discussing different UFO experiences. Anyway, I came home, and then the next couple of days come by, and there was a knock at the door. And when I went to the door, there was a man standing there, and he says, are you Harry Howell? I said, yeah. He says, you're the one that's... I said, yeah. I said, by the way, who are you? Oh, he says, I'm from the government. I would like you to come out to my car and identify what you saw.
Did he prove he was from the government?
Yeah, I got him to prove... he brought something out of his pocket to prove that he was from the government.
Okay, so he took you to the car.
Pardon?
He took you to the car?
Yeah. I went to the car and I sat in the back seat, and he handed me a great big giant book back with all kinds of pictures that were sent in from all around the world of all different UFOs. There's all kinds of types. There's types which are real long with windows on the side, and there's kind that can fly in the air and they can dip right down into the ocean and go under like a submarine and then come right up somewhere else and go into the sky again. We don't know. Our technology is backwards. Compared to what there is up there.
Did he have a picture or some similarity to what you saw?
Yes. Yeah, I hunted and hunted through the book, and finally I did find what I saw.
and then I showed it to him. And he said how high was it? Anyway, he had a way to describe it, and I told him how high it was, and he figured it out from his arm's length. He brought out different coins out of his pocket at arm's length, and finally I identified the size of coin and everything, how high that he could identify how high the ship was in the air.
So he was taking you seriously?
Oh, yeah. I'm serious, too.
Well, I realize that, but what happened after that?
Well, after that, I just had to keep hunting around. What's the answer to the UFOs? And I've got the answer to one part of the UFO picture.
Well, just before you give me that, what did the government guy do after he left you? Did they ever get back to you?
No.
Okay.
No. He was writing stuff down that I was telling him.
Yeah. Harry, when was this exactly?
A few years back. It could be 6 or 7 years ago.
Did he say what branch of the government he was with?
EMO, Emergency Measures Organization.
Oh, that's an interesting place to hide things. Huh.
Yeah, and he said there's a lot of things that's going on in this world that they don't tell us.
That's for sure, yes.
Yeah, but he really said that to you?
Yes, he did. That would frighten everybody, I think. Because we are living in times, I figure we're living in the very last decade. This decade won't get over till we're attacked from of UFOs. And I had to hunt and hunt, and finally I found out, and I found it in the good book. And in King James Version, I hunted and hunted, and I found the answer in there. I was hunting all over the place. Finally, I found it. In Zechariah 5, it describes the size of these ships, and it describes it in cubits. And I wondered, and I hunted all over to find out what a cubit is, and I found out a cubit is from the tip of your biggest finger down to your elbow of the average man, and that measures out to 18 inches. And in the good book, they don't call them, they don't call it UFOs in there. They call them flying roll. And that gives you the size of them in there, and the size identifies what I saw with my eyes. And the size of these are so many cubits long and so many cubits wide.
Stanton, do you buy the...
And it worked out to be 15 feet wide and 30 feet long, these ships are, and they're all silver. And according to the Bible, God is going to give the command to attack this planet, and they're going to attack all the homes of those that steal and swear. I remember I was watching a TV show the other day, and there was so much swearing on it. It's terrible. They never used to allow that... people to listen to swearing and all kinds of dirty things coming out of their mouth. Why, look at how dirty the planet is now. We can't even got a place to dump our garbage. The planet is on decay. This world is on decay, but God is going to send this attack on the planet.
Can I interrupt you there, sir, because you've raised something that intrigues me, and Stanton, I'm sure you've had to deal with this. You've got two levels of this exploration that always go on.
Some religious people tell me that since the Earth was created only 15,000 years ago, the universe was created 15,000 years ago, and since I talk about other stars being billions of years older, they wouldn't believe anything I had to say, and obviously this was the work of the devil. And there are some people who take that view. As a matter of fact, Jerry Falwell down in the state, a fundamentalist, has, in writing, his people have said that this is the only life there is in the universe, that which is here, and that this is indeed the work of the devil. There is a different kind of religious significance now. There's been some very good work by some quite professional people dealing with what I would call UFO sightings in the Bible and making a case for a number of things, the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day, and a whole Ezekiel's, the chariots and so forth, as being old-day versions of what we would today call UFO sightings. I would love if there have been 8 PhD theses done about UFOs, and if I were to do one, and I only have a master's in physics, but if I were to do one, I'd love to do it on the Bible and flying saucers, bringing to bear modern technology and modern scholarship with regard to the Bible. So I can't dismiss a religious aspect. I mean, we have the cargo cult during World War II, seeing airplanes for the first time, creating straw airplanes and worshiping them. This is out in the boonies in New Guinea, you understand, and you might call them a Stone Age culture. So that it wouldn't be surprising if anybody here responded in a rather strange, far-out religious way to any visitors here who were obviously, by their definition, magical creatures.
Well, I wouldn't be able to be talking to you if there wasn't a God, because one time I went out fishing, and instead of me getting fishing, I was a fish that got caught in quicksand.
And on that note, I'm going to thank you for calling in, sir. Got to move on.
Yes.
Take care.
Okay, thank you.
Go to somebody driving the car east of Toronto. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon.
Hi, I'm in my car on the way to the 401. Are you having trouble hearing me? I'm on the way to Montreal.
We can hear you, but speak up and maybe make it brief if you could.
Receiver, hold on. Okay, how's that?
That's better, great.
Okay. Well, I saw a UFO I don't even know if it was a spaceship, but it was about 5 or 6 years ago, and it was in the summer. And what I found strange was not the seeing of it itself, but the behavior that people, first of all, the location that I saw it in, and the behavior that people were having towards this thing.
Towards you?
Towards the sighting of this UFO. There was all kinds of strange reactions from people. It was in the middle of the day, and I was walking along Bel Air in Toronto, and I saw a bunch of people looking up in the sky, and I took a look, and there was this thing just hovering there. It was very big. It was circular. And my immediate reaction wasn't, this is a UFO, but what is this? Now, there were about 10 or 12 people looking up, and there were people who looked up and walked right by. They just didn't want to acknowledge it. There were a couple, I was with a friend of mine, and I said, would you take a look at that? And she said, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. I said, but look at it, it's weird. And she wouldn't look at it. Now, I would say about 50 to 60% of the people had that kind of a reaction. They looked up and they didn't want to know from it. And at one point, my friend said it must be some kind of a plane. One of the people that was looking, and it was really very calm. It was a very calming thing. I mean, I wasn't going well. One of the people that was looking said, I was in the Israeli Air Force, and I can tell you that that is not a plane. So it was definitely something very unusual. It wasn't like anything I had ever seen before, and it was just hovering there. And after a short period of time, it just seemed to take off. It just lifted up.
Did you ever look into what it might have been?
No, I think it was a UFO, but whether or not it was a spaceship, I don't know. But it certainly, it was almost comical because I was looking at it and thinking, it looks exactly like what a UFO should look like.
But nobody wanted to join in.
Yeah, there were people who joined in. There were a whole group of us who were looking at it, but there were a number of people who just walked right by.
I'm going to thank you for...
Pardon? Sorry,
I'm going to thank you for calling. Your car phone's breaking up a bit, but I'll get Stanton...
I can hear that, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Is that becoming the norm, Stanton? People don't want to admit because they'll have to deal with?
Well, I think as time goes on, the old non-believers die and the young believers grow up. All the polls show the older the individual, the less likely to believe in flying saucers. There certainly are people who don't want to have to deal with this. I mean, the notion that people see UFOs because they want to is nonsense.
What about the flip, where maybe you see them because you are susceptible to the thought?
That, again, that's peripheral. It's the good close encounters, the physical trace cases, the abduction cases, the experiences that are not, you know, dim lights in the sky seen from a long distance. There's so many good cases. Well, for example, the 3,500 pilot sightings from 40 countries that have been collected by a retired now NASA scientist, with 90% having more than one witness and 50% lasting longer than a minute, and hundreds of these 3,500 cases involving radar or physical effects of some kind, a compass going wild, that sort of thing. You need not deal with the junk. In the largest study ever done for the United States Air Force, Project Blue Book Special Report 14, they looked at 3,200 cases. 21.5% couldn't be identified, completely separate from the ones for which there was insufficient information. I did a quality evaluation. The better the quality, the more likely to be an unknown. And the time duration, the unknowns are observed for longer than the knowns. So one can throw out most of the stuff. You've got to be like the basketball coach who says, don't tell me about the midgets. Give me those big guys. Sure, they're rare. Give me one seven-footer. I'll settle for that. So the fact that most sightings can be explained is irrelevant. It's the ones that can't be that are exciting and interesting and fascinating, just as the fact that most people aren't 7 feet tall is irrelevant.
Stanton Friedman is a physicist and a UFO researcher. He's my guest. He's in our Fredericton studio today. We go back to the phones to London. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon.
Hi. I'd really like to ask your guest, Stanton, if he has any documentation on one of the PWA flights going up or returning back from Inuvik up in the Arctic. And this happened about 15 years ago. There were 54 passengers on the aircraft. It was a 737, cruising along at about 550 miles an hour. And the plane was met at the industrial airport in Edmonton, Alberta, by RCMP and various people from the government. I was a passenger on that aircraft. It was flight 543, I believe. I can't be sure of the flight number. But it made the newspapers, and I firmly believe what we saw, and the 54 passengers and the flight crew saw, was a UFO.
Was it daytime or?
No, this was at night. And of course, we're talking the high Arctic, where the air was very cold and extremely, extremely clear. You know, you don't have the pollution problem.
Yeah, right.
The visibility was phenomenal. And this object paralleled the aircraft for several minutes, and the pilot had to take evasive action several times. Well, not several, but two or three times there were violent maneuvers performed. the majority of the personnel on the aircraft are working in the oil industry and the mining industry, so then, needless to say, we all have cameras. Our film was confiscated at the airport, at the industrial airport. We were, like, herded into a room and...
Who took it?
Pardon me?
Who took your film?
It was a government agency. The RCMP were there, and it was basically a fright sort of thing. You must give us this. We will develop it and return it to you, which they never did, of course.
Of course.
And the object seemed to be extremely large. The shape, I guess everybody likes to see a flying saucer. This was nothing like a flying saucer. It looked like a cigar.
That's the common shape for the huge reports. The things that, as one Japan Airlines pilot described, as twice the size of an aircraft carrier. A cigar shape is a good description for most of the really huge things.
Right, and it was not a dimly lit object. I mean, you could see it clear as day.
Any windows?
Not that you could. I couldn't discern windows as such. It seemed to that there were bands of darker areas on the hull, and that, for all intents and purposes, could be just like a smoke glass window, I guess.
Right.
You know, like there weren't portholes or antennas or little pieces and gadgets sticking out of it. It was just a very large object. And
bigger than your airplane?
Pardon me?
Was it much bigger than your airplane?
Oh, yes, my goodness, yes. To discern the size would be difficult. But considering the pilot took evasive measures, I assume that this object was quite close, and it looked huge. Also, there was the dew line reported a collision at that time, and what appeared to be a collision, and I would assume that that was the craft as well as the aircraft coming into such close proximity of it, to each other. And there were reports made of this. It leaked into the newspapers, of course. And all of a sudden, it was just quiet. We've never heard a thing about this ever again. And the pilot and co-pilot, these are well-known pilots. They were on this run for many, many years, and they all of a sudden did not fly on this run anymore. And also, like, I'm in the mining industry, and I worked for El Dorado Nuclear up at the Port Radium Mine.
Yeah.
And this mine was the mine that's basically supplied the material for the Nagasaki and Hiroshima, as well as the Manhattan Project bombs. And during the winter, a lot of sightings in that area, or there were a lot of sightings of phenomena that you couldn't explain, and I think a lot of people didn't want to believe that there were possibilities of UFOs, but a strange thing was that the Canadian Air Force, with the Argus aircraft, would just about on a weekly basis do several low passes over that area, and we asked one of the pilots... because they were out of Edmonton, at Namao, why they were buzzing the mine constantly, and they said, well, it's sovereignty. You know, it seems strange, because, you know, we're quite a distance inland, and, you know, if they've got nothing better to do than come and wave hello to a bunch of miners, we find it's just rather strange, and the strangest part is the hush-hush of the PWA flight.
You know, Stan, what can somebody like this caller do?
He can get in touch with me. I'd like to give out an address and even my phone number, because I'd like to find out more about this particular case. Some sightings, I mean, lights in the sky, what are you going to do something with? But when you got a whole plane full of people seeing something huge, and I've got other Canadian airline flights with pilots describing things that they saw, and in one case a great radar sighting of something moving 5,400 miles an hour in level flight, and with a return on the radar screen indicating something five or six times the size of a 747. That's pretty big.
Yeah, this thing was, like I said, it was hard to establish the size of the object, but like I said, it was a very, very clear sky. And the amount of stars that got blotted out in the background was, you know, it filled the entire window of the aircraft at one time. In other words, looking out, you could not see anything other than this object.
Caller, I'll be giving out Stanton's address in New Brunswick just at the end of the show, but I thank you for calling. I think you'll want to hear more about this.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Trying to get one more call in from Pickering. Good afternoon. You're on Radio Noon. Hello, Pickering.
Yes, I was up in the Bancroft area September 89, about the third week in September. And we're out in the back, and we're looking up the sky for satellites. You can see them flying by. And there was a flash in the sky, and like it was a white flare. Like it was, like it's hard to distinguish, but it was probably as thin as a dime if you held it up, and then it was completely gone. Is there an explanation for that?
An unknown, but I certainly can't. To pin down things like that, you really need very specific information. If people would, for example, use the tools they have with them, what angle above the horizon? Move your arm.
Directly above the head, to the northeast.
And what angular size? What could you hold at arm's length?
Well, that's what I said, like a dime.
Well, but you see, many people, when they use a dime, they really mean something much smaller. You can cover the moon.
But the thinness of the dime.
Oh, okay, but you can cover the moon with an aspirin tablet at arm's length.
Hmm, that's pretty hard to distinguish, but, well, I could say that it might, like, looking directly above, I would say it would have maybe went an inch.
That's very large. If you could hold your arm way out in front of you as far as you can reach, an inch would be four times the diameter of the moon. Believe it or not. Try it sometime.
So what is the explanation that I saw?
I have no idea. It's an unknown object in the sky. But I would need to know the precise time and direction and date and what other people might have seen at the same time.
Well, it was the 21st of September, and it was between 9:30 and 10 o'clock in the Bancroft area,
and
north, directly above head in the north.
And did it start and stop? Did it move right,
it
left?
It was like a slight explosion. And then there was a flare that came out of it, and that was it. It was gone. Like, it was way up there. Like, we were looking for satellites. You know how you look for satellites?
Yeah.
You can see them moving.
Nobody saw it through a telescope.
No, no. This was just with the naked eye.
Don't know what it was. Could have been a rocket launch from up, way up there. Where is it? Churchill, where they launch rockets from. But I don't know.
I was looking up in the sky, directly above me in the sky, directly above the sky.
Okay, I don't know what it was. It certainly doesn't sound like a conventional aircraft, obviously. Maybe it was a balloon, but I don't know.
Like a solar something or something like that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Right.
I wish I could explain all sightings, then I wouldn't have anything to do about lecturing and so forth,
and
but
then,
I can't.
And then the debate would go away. Thanks for calling in, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. I have to admit to you, Staten, I didn't mention it at the beginning, but I do remember looking out over a lake a while back, and I saw these three or four big yellow balls up in the air. Terrific lights, dark, nighttime, right? Perfect
yep.
vision. Suddenly realized I was looking over a tank range, and they were firing night flares.
Oh, yeah, look, there are so many things that have been...
But I wanted to believe.
Well, there's so many things that have been reported as UFOs that turn out to be IFOs. I mean, the list is as long as my arm.
Yeah. When are we going to get the proof, though?
I don't know. I've just finished my final report on a study of documents leaked to us several years ago, which describe what happened at Roswell, New Mexico, which describe how Harry Truman set up a committee of 12, accountable only to him, to deal with this. And I've just concluded that these documents are genuine. Now, this hasn't hit the fan yet. This is my first public announcement about the conclusion, because I've been in doubt for a long time as I've tried to check things out, and there are a whole bunch of anti-arguments that I've had to go through. That may kick things off. I don't know. If this Soviet sighting, where the head of the Soviet Air Defense Command describes an extraordinary event that happened just this year that's not made it into the press of the United States, if it finally does, something 100 to 200 meters in diameter, seen from above and below by military people, seen on air and ground radar, and able to move at speeds exceeding, as he put it, those of a modern jet fighter by two or three times, and also able to hover. This is quite an incredible event, great maneuverability and so forth. It made it in the Soviet Union. This is a five-star general, Igor Maltsev.
Very brief answer, Stanton. I have to ask you to be
sure.
Brief. If George Bush, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Brian Mulroney stand up and say, yep, it's true, we believe it, is the world ready for it?
It has to be done very carefully. I think most people, yes. Some people, no. There are businessmen who'd be concerned. Religious leaders would be concerned. I think it has to be done carefully, but I've lectured all over. I find most people can accept it. There will be some people who never will. That's their problem, not ours. I think the planet, the young people especially, are ready for such an announcement, as long as it's not done in a they're here to eat us and destroy us kind of way. That would cause havoc, and for obvious reasons, I think.
Thank you very much, and thank you for breaking that information on the show.
Okay, can I give out my address?
Please do.
Anybody who wants information, Stanton Friedman, 79 Pembroke Crescent, Fredericton, E3B2V1. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope. Get a free list of materials. 79 Pembroke, Fredericton, New Brunswick, E3B2V1. I'm in the phone book, the only Friedman in New Brunswick.
Stanton, thanks again.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. That's Stanton Friedman down in our Fredericton studio. We have that address and phone number on file if you want. Just time to thank the people who put Radio Noon together. Nancy Putterman, Bob Wilson, Rodney Palmer, Victoria Fenner, and Laurie Townsend. Our technicians, Carol Ito, John Lewis, Ralph Frampton, and Joanne Anka. News editors, Peter Hitzepetros and Georgie Binks. We get administrative assistance from Jenny Wells, Roberta Walker, and Pia Kofed. Sam Kriparos is our custodian, keeps things neat and clean. Rodney Palmer did some double duty as a producer. Mark Metkowitz is the producer of Radio Noon. I'm Christopher Thomas. Have a great weekend. Take care.